Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And as a matter of fact, we're going to kind of touch on the magnitude of fraud. Now, I have not done a full update because, you know, government is growing and growing and growing and growing. It's even growing under Trump. Is Doge or whatever, is that already organic or is that something new? We're continually growing government. And just because you're cutting out the spending and those things doesn't mean we're really removing, destroying, dismantling, and making it impossible for anything to come back. And as a matter of fact, you know, if you ever watch the old Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or what have you with the Hydra, you know, cut off the head and two heads come back. So anyway, in your appeals, please remember that when you're done with your appeals to heaven, that everything is really riding on you. This is not something that you can just wash your hands in. We're living in a world where we have actually responsibilities. And it's interesting because I'm going to dive into common law. It's interesting how people will do everything they can to actually, you know, restore, you know, a theocracy, but they won't do anything to restore liberty. And I think this is the big deception that people have, or whether religious ideologues that have in their minds, that, you know, we need to, you know, have controls over everything so that people can't hurt themselves. It's the, how is that different from communism? Well, you know, they just look at, you know, the things that you should be doing to be different. Maybe you don't need to have a family. We'll just make sure that the best. I mean, that was Plato's Republic. If you've read it and you understand, the idea was the government would actually determine how to make the best society by putting, you know, the genetics and so forth together, where the brilliant people would have more brilliant and genius children, and the athletes would have stronger and faster children, and they would all be able to serve their functions in society. Anyway, let me finish this obligatory that your campaign begins now. Now, on Monday, I kind of want to focus on that campaign and what we're doing and how this is actually growing and how you can you can create a ground zero in your state. You can create ground zero in your county. You have to get people. I mean, the only way people are going to even join, you don't need people to follow you. We need people to join you in doing the right thing. The problem is everybody has these different views of what the right thing is. And unless it's interposition, they're wrong. But they won't accept the fact that they're wrong until you can actually prove to them with empirical data that they're wrong. Now, they may still insist on being wrong, and, you know, my hat goes off to all of those people that, because they have the right to be wrong to their death. That it's America. And people have the right to be offended. They have the right to make their choices. That's what the land of liberty is all about. But don't tell me you care about fixing the problem if you're not going to get engaged in what is proven as the only solution. So, you're either a part of the problem or you're a part of the solution. And 9 times out of 10, most people are part of the problem. So, let me dive into a go back, because before I dive into common law, I want to kind of close on this concept of this song, 32 Doors, because it really placed context for me. And and I really, you know, because of, you know, my meat cooking morning, I had the opportunity to listen to, you know, the Lamb and the Chamber of 32 Doors. If you can go get the lyrics, go through this. It is like the epitome of today. When we look at, you know, how many people are just running around like chickens with their heads cut off. And, you know, so the lyrics kind of go, I'll just read parts of these things. At the top of the stairs, there's hundreds of people running around to all the doors. It's the Chamber of 32 Doors. And they try to find themselves an audience. Their deductions need applause. Now, when you really think about what's going on today, everybody's saying, "We can follow me. This is the way out." And then next thing you know, they're right back into the Chamber of 32 Doors. They're not really leading you out. They're just looking for an audience to say, "Hey, you're brilliant in your deductions. Let's take that door." And they come right back. So the point is how do we get out of this? Now, I've already talked about the seven paths. We've got the party. The party, the way the party is designed, it is inept, impotent, and unable to solve this problem. The courts will not solve the problem. They are the problem. The convention of states cannot solve the problem. And just willy-nilly amendments will not solve the problem. And right now, there's really no amendments that will actually solve the problem. Not one. Not one amendment. Now, if you feel in a contrarian mood and you want to prove me wrong, send me the amendment. Send me the silver bullet. Because I will read your silver bullet and then I will give you my 2 cents on it. Because there is no silver bullet. The Constitution is the silver bullet. We need full compliance. Some people say, well, the Constitution doesn't need to be rewritten. It needs to be reread. Okay, but you have to understand what you're reading. And the problem is that when you're looking and reading the Constitution, if you're not placing context to what parts are being violated, then you're just going through a drill or an exercise of futility. So back to the Chamber of 32 Doors. We have these paths, right? And we've gone through the three up to the convention of states. The anti-convention states say nullification. Oh, we need to ignore the problem. That'll make it go away. And then we have this huge, under this fifth umbrella, even though there are this fifth path, there may be lots of the general assemblies, the sovereigns, Anna von Ritz, all of these idiots trying to convince you to either get involved in a shadow government or trying to get you to literally obliterate your membership in and under this Constitution, because the Constitution is the problem. And that is not... If that's the case, then the convention state folks are right. And they can't prove to you that there's any one part of the Constitution that is actually causing these problems. You're the problem. We're the problem. We're allowing government to operate outside its delegated powers. It's that simple. Enforcement. So, okay, so we've covered again the party, the court. We've covered the amendment or conventions, the nullification. And all of these folks that are, these are literally the thousands of people running around saying, hey, you got to do this, you got to follow this, you got to do that. No, we have to demand compliance. So out of those five, proven that those won't do it. So the sixth one is an armed revolution. Oh, that's the ultimate coup d'etat. I mean, that is the ultimate way of solving a problem is deadly force, killing lots of people. Now, those people that, you know, get off on that stuff, you know, go out and, you know, and the military is essential. National security is essential. That being said, when we apply deadly force and a revolution, civil war, whatever you want to call it, we never come out with the government that we go in with. We will always, history has proven, even our own civil war unconstitutionally and illegitimately changed our government. The only way, and so what should have happened was, you know, well, I'm not even going to dive into that because I go through it all the time. And I'm sure I'm tired of hearing it. So you should be too. So back to the Chamber of 32 Doors, because we're proving that interposition is the only way. And so they talk about, you know, this trust. And I mentioned yesterday that I'd rather trust, you know, a countryman because they don't shout what they found, you know, and I'd rather trust a man that, you know, is poor or reasonable. And as a matter of fact, it goes down to this point where they say, you know, that in the Chamber of 32 Doors, there's these priests and magicians. And there are these people that are, you know, conjuring up, you know, all of this interesting stuff. There's, and they actually say this, it says, even academics printing or searching printed word. Now, the question is, if you're an academic, because I get pulled into this way too many times. If an academic is out there providing a bunch of ancillary information, and they're not actually using any source document. When I say a source document, like the John Birch Society goes out and tries to convince you that the commission for the delegates that went to the Constitutional Convention were a runaway. We actually went through this. We literally just went through this a few weeks ago. And we proved to you that the commission gave them more than enough latitude to actually create the significant changes to the government to present to the people. They weren't. There was no language in there that said you can only make and suggest changes or amendments to the Articles of Confederation. You can't do these other things. That was not communicated. They were told to make whatever they thought necessary in regards to the exigencies of the Union. And they did it. And as a matter of fact, as we're going through Madison's notes on the convention, I'm pointing out that these guys were always checking themselves to make sure they were trying to stay within those bounds. They knew that the states would not like what they were going to present because the states would finally have to face the music, at least not all the states. The six states that vigorously debated the Constitution, those six states were in the grasp of, they were all in the grasp of corruption, but they possessed power that they were not willing to give up. They were the problems in the Union. Even though Rogue Island was a huge problem in the Union, the big six states were the bigger problem. And so they weren't willing to give it up. So the point is, if you want to be academic, you're not academic if you're not dealing with the source documents. I mean, do you trust people that provide analysis on the Word of God, or do you trust the Scriptures and the Spirit? When it comes to our government and how our government was formed, quit reading the drivel and the editorial drivel of all of these different people publishing books. It's the same thing as the drivel regarding common law. I don't think I have read or have heard about a book that actually nails down common law under our constitutional republic. And I say that because I have listened to people selling their what they believe common law is. Well, common law is the laws of God, and civil law is the laws of the city. We've actually had common law lawyers a common law lawyer on this show. And that's exactly what they espoused. And I'm here to tell you that common law in our hybrid constitutional republic is not that. It can be that in maybe your area, but it can't be that in all areas applied, period. Because in our hybrid constitutional republic, we've created governments with very specific powers. There is no latitude given to the judiciary to create law. In other words, when they make a decision on a case, it has to be based on law and fact. They can't start interpreting and we've actually proven to you academically that in the ratification debates, we did this last year, we're going to do it again this year, that in the ratification debates, there was not one mention of the courts having the ability to use case law, case precedents, or was there any mention of the courts having the latitude of creating law, interpreting the law, bending the law, and basically injecting law, writing law, however you want to put it. Those ideas came from Hamilton. And Hamilton knew, and there's no doubt in my mind, this is the most evil scheme that had been injected. And interestingly enough, I can't believe why nobody's picked this up. I mean, I've been always focused on, I don't try to go out of my way finding these problems. But when they present themselves, it just becomes really obvious. Wow, that's a huge problem. That is a huge problem. Giving power to a judiciary in a Republican form of government. The framers, or I should say the Federalists, were right. As long as you adhere to and demand compliance of the Constitution, those things that the anti-Federalists were telling you would not ever come to pass. They wouldn't be able to do those things. But when you let them actually violate the words and those boundaries in the Constitution, then voila. Surprise, surprise, they've now done these atrocities to you. Getting the court. See, the court was passive. Its hands were tied. Its hands were tied. Its jurisdiction was fixed. They couldn't bring in any and everything that they wanted to. Well, you know, that means that they don't have much to do. Well, if you want to spice it up, let's cut through these walls. Let's open it all up so that we can do anything and everything we want to do. Well, they don't have that authority. Sorry, folks. And the fact is that this is where we are. When it comes to common law is the law that is basically left to the people in our government. In other words, when we've created, so when America broke away from Britain, I've covered this several times, that fundamentally, each of the states had common law. They invoked common law, and they were Christian and theocratic. All of the states were Christian, whether they were non-denominational, which means that they didn't necessarily have a church, but the churches took care of the justice of the people, the compassionate services, those types of things. That was common law. And the state level, they made sure that the selling of your goods and the importation of goods, those few things in commerce, you know, were happening so that you could grow and thrive. They managed, you know, people coming in. They were importing people. The states had all those controls. The federal government was very limited and defined. Once it was created, it couldn't get involved in your common law. But the Bill of Rights protected your rights and privileges under common law. Now, it was brought up to me, and this was a brilliant point by Rob Duff, that when you place context to the $20 barrier or that $20 limitation in the Seventh Amendment, right? When you actually look at, you know, what that is and what they meant with that today, right? So if we go to the Seventh Amendment, this is what it says. In suits of common law, now this is not granting the federal government, this is a restriction placed upon them. So that in suits of common law, where the controversy, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. Now, we don't have, I don't know if any state actually has trial by jury. There may be some states that actually do. How? What is the difference between trial by jury and a jury trial? Trial by jury means that the jury is in control of determining the outcome, that the judge cannot instruct them what to ignore and basically overturn their verdict. The trial by jury is sacred in our system, and it has been completely obviated by the bar, by our judicial system, because it's all about control for them, which is why they will grant you the privilege of a trial, a jury trial. However, when you actually look at these cases of common law, which we're supposed to have, is the government involved in marriage and divorce? No, it's not in their constitution, right? That is not in your state constitution. But they've stepped into that by, you know, stating that men and men can get married. Now, that right there is an overreach, because those things in the Ninth Amendment, the enumeration in the Constitution, such as this right of marriage, of, as it says, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights, shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. So when you try to create rights for certain people, certain classes of people, you're actually violating the rights of everybody else. And those things create conflicts. People don't understand, well, how, you know, what do we do? It's a conflict. It needs to be stricken. It cannot stand. No person has the right to deny other people their rights just so that they can have their right protected. You don't like to be insulted, so you want to have the right so they can't say something to about you. They can't say something that they, you know, which is the truth. You're a pervert or what have you, okay? So whatever those words are that hurt your feelings, you cannot regulate or create a law that keeps people from being able to say those words. It's the same thing. You're denying other people their right. And it's a fact. You do have a right to be hurt. You have a right to be offended. You have a right to be wrong, as I said at the beginning. You could be wrong all the way to your death because you live here, because you live in the land of liberty. Therefore, you cannot create laws, you cannot create amendments to the Constitution denying the liberty of the people. Now, you can create a law in your home that says, in this home, you cannot use these words. And you can be the police of that. But if somebody bigger comes along and says, well, I'm not going to follow that and let me see you force me, then what ends up happening is you have to try to find somebody to enforce your arbitrary tyranny. We need to start understanding these things, but this is really not what I wanted to talk about today. What I really want to dive into is and it's interesting that I kind of wake up out of, you know, going through this chamber 32 doors, because the reality is we are literally running around like chickens with our heads cut off trying to figure out what's to go, and nobody cares about the true academic path of the only way that's going to get us out of this. And so this is the whole frustration because of the Trump effect and so forth, but I'm going to be right back after this promo. Thank you.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so we're going to talk on Monday about how to start getting smart by getting involved in standing up these constitutional compliance committees. I believe you have a great opportunity to become a delegate at your county constitutional convention. I believe that as people start seeing the work that's done by these constitutional compliance committees, they're going to start waking up and going, oh my gosh, you know, government can be simple. Government does not have to be difficult. Now, when you look at the model of the federal government, the enumeration of powers are where? In Article 1, Section 1 through Section 7, those are enumerations of standards, roles, responsibilities, but not powers. None of those things, none of those words are open for amendment. The only thing where Congress can actually create law, or no, I should say, the only way they can be changed is via an amendment. They're not open for giving Congress the ability to create laws about them. In other words, you know, the standard of a person to become a senator, you must be 35 years of age and what, 10 years a citizen, whatever that is. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. They can't create laws that say you have to be blonde, blue-eyed, you have to be white. They cannot create any law regarding what the standards are for a senator. Now, when we look at Article 1, Section 8, because let's go look at that, because I don't believe that we're going to find, not Article 1, Section 8, Article 1, Section 2, I think is where they talk about the qualifications. No person shall be a representative who shall not have attained the age of 25, this is the representative, and have been 7 years a citizen, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state in which he shall be chosen. Now, it says he, but we've opened public service, we've opened it all up to be genderless because of the Constitution giving suffrage to women and so forth. Do we need to amend the Constitution to actually change that he? I don't think so. But technically, they can't create laws that say it can only be women. It can only be men. That is not a part of the Constitution open for legislation. The only place that there's granted the federal government to be able to make laws about is in Article 1, Section 8. Go look at your state constitution and you tell me where the state legislatures have the authority to legislate law, because they didn't do a good job in writing your constitution to isolate the powers of legislation are tied to these objects and these objects only. So in other words, as we've grown over the past 200 some years, 240, 50 years, whatever, even more than that, because I mean, as the trials of liberty of 1763 started, I mean, we're coming close to 300 years of this trial run of liberty. So We should be smarter in creating good, defined county constitutions. And we're going to make them so that it requires a majority of the districts in the county. Now, when we look at a county, we look at, you know, most people just look at the entire population. But you will actually have a few different population centers because you got little towns. I mean, usually counties are pretty big. In some states, they're not. But overall, through the majority of the states, we can see that there may be a few different towns, one larger than the other. But the county is broken up kind of by congressional district, legislative district, county districts, so that the population has these at least three districts or five. You want to make sure that your county is divided into odd districts to ensure that you have either a majority of the districts or a specific parameter of two-thirds, three-fourths, what have you, to ensure it is never a democracy, to ensure that it makes it hard for government to take and get rid of powers, containments, restrictions, those types of things, because that's how the people are protected from government being able to start granting itself more and more powers. So, getting back to our government. Now, the one thing I want you to understand, because I'm going to cover, because we already covered the Department of Education. The only education that the federal government has a responsibility to be involved in is setting the standards, training, and equipping, and basically creating a standardization of the militia across the union. That's it. That's the only thing that they have the responsibility of taking a tax dollar and using in educating the people. Huh. So apparently, social engineering is not constitutional, like cultural engineering, social engineering. But anyway, so we kind of covered the Department of Education, gone. It has no relevance at the federal level. Most all of these other things have no relevance at the federal level either. But I believe education has a domestic connotation. So that's something that the states need to actually, you know, put over in a hopper and say, we need to talk about that. And as a matter of fact, I would call that hopper strategic planning to ensure that every part of the union is kind of agreed upon these standards or these strategic ideas of ensuring that all the children have a quality curriculum so that all states will maintain a competitive edge, or I should say, maintain the ability to be competitive. If you allow certain states to go down the path of, I'll just say, indolence, then, you know, they're going to become a problem. Remember, I've said this several times lately. States need to be able to sustain themselves. If they go down a path of indolence, next thing you know, they're going to be required to get bailed out and so forth. If a state, if a county goes down the path of it in being incapable of sustaining itself, it should be broken up. It should be broken up and actually re-disbanded and basically divided up in the states around it or the counties around it, so that that would never happen again to those poor folks that had a government that allowed indolence, or they allowed them, because who's in charge? We the people are. So the people at blame and the people at fault, you can't, I mean, it's easy to blame Obama. But we have a long train of people, the United States citizens from the 1800s, allowing these characters to do things that they shouldn't be doing. So is it really Obama's fault? No, Obama is the next latest and greatest, or I should say Biden, or even Trump, the next latest and greatest opportunist that is, you know, sitting on top of the heap, and they're going to take advantage because of all the benefits that have been afforded them through all of the things we've allowed them to do. So getting back to this laundry list, if you want to understand the magnitude of the problem, look this up. List of federal agencies in the United States. Now, you can go to the government and see how they kind of, you know, make a political correct list of this these agencies. And as a matter of fact, I did this in 2023. And as I looked at the federal government's A to Z's of the executive departments, they came up with 533 different things that were agencies, offices, departments, and so forth under the executive. If you go to Wiki and you look for the list of government agencies or the list of federal agencies in the United States, you'll actually find that it actually comes to thousands. And I mean thousands. So help me out here, folks. When we want to really see all these little offices that aren't tucked under this agency, or all of these other little things that, oh, you know, somebody created that, you know, they need more attention, let's put them over here. That's how they hide those things. This is so DOGE has kind of helped everybody understand, wow, it's pretty big. But DOGE is not looking at this constitutionally. But everybody loves how they're looking at it because it's saving them money, which is the wrong paradigm. It's not about whether they're spending money or not, whether we want them to spend money. Does the government have the authority for that little office or department to exist? Education, no. It's gone. Boom, solved. Problem solved. It's not even about spending anymore. It's about authority. Republic Review actually hits the ball out of the park. It actually identifies everything that there is no delegation of authority for them to be involved in. So when we look at the executive departments, we've got, you know, all sorts of problems. When we look at the DOD, you've already heard me harangue and go on and on about the DOD is well outside the constitutional scope. The only entity that where there are U.S. citizens in uniform serving this nation outside the borders of this nation and outside the coastline are our waters, our national waters and our national boundaries must be in the Navy or the Marine Corps under the Department of the Navy. They're going up to space, they got to be in the Navy because the Constitution created the Navy to be the external force dealing with any type of strategic or tactical threats outside the United States, outside the boundaries, out up in space or what have you. So when we look at how the Army and the Air Force have all of these bases nation, you know, worldwide, they got to close down. Or if they're really strategic, if they're really a strategic interest, then the Navy needs to basically take over. But the question is, why are they strategic interest? If they're strategic interest because we're funneling money into that nation, such as Spain, Italy, right, Germany, what have you, then that's not a strategic interest. That is not a strategic interest, and those bases must be shut down. Now, a strategic interest is we need ports in these parts of the areas or in parts of the world so that we have a good enough presence throughout the world to basically guard our commerce. We have a responsibility to make sure our commerce can flow throughout the world. Even China has benefited under this. You hear me say, we, the United States, has been basically funding and subsidizing the growth of communism because of all of these things we do. We directly subsidize it, and then we even protect it. So we need to change that. And as a matter of fact, this would actually help everybody start understanding and appreciating a nation that takes a stand on liberty and defends it jealously. So, when we look, the DoD needs major reconfiguration to get back to its actual design. The Department of Interior, that's one that's got to go. Federal government has nothing in the Constitution to be meddling within any of these states, period, at all. Gone. Now, out of all of the people, out of all of these entertainers that are giving you all these great ways to, you know, affidavits or, you know, go fight the courts this way, or we got lawyers. Are those people really a threat? I mean, they get criticized, but they're not a threat because they don't threaten the status quo and they're not really going to fix the problem. But when you're sitting here haranguing on all of these unconstitutional things that have to go, you really do become the threat. You become one of the most dangerous people in the room. Now, you can live in a very safe world and, you know, zip your mouth and not say anything. But once you know that they don't have the authority to do it and you don't speak up, then it's kind of like, it's almost like, you know, you abandoning the word of God. You're giving up your citizenship of the United States to basically support the insurrection against the United States. How do I say this? The word support, supporting the Constitution, is not a passive application. The requirement of support is, as Madison stated, we've gone through this, we must oppose every infraction. The people that are supposed to oppose that, it is their job to oppose that because they are the parties over that compact, are your state legislatures. The people that are actually employed by we the people to keep our state government in line are our county supervisors, commissioners, and so forth. And we the people are supposed to keep our counties, our local governments in check to make sure that they're doing what, if everybody was doing their cotton picking job, GR wouldn't be that most dangerous guy in the world. And this is not arrogance at all. You know, you have to have a very profound understanding of what the heck is happening. The guys that are talking about, you know, these conspiracies and, you know, gold and this and that, you know, and how that's ours and that's not theirs. And they're not a threat. Because they're not actually stating that there is no authority whatsoever for the government to have created corporations. There's no authority for the courts to be able to do the things that they're doing. The legal practices and their processes are not within their authority. When you start challenging the actual existence of these people in their positions, now you're actually poking the bear. Now you're actually kicking the hornet's nest. But you can talk about, you know, the source of that hornet's nest for all these conspiracy theorists are just, this goes back to that chamber of 32 doors. They're not trying to get you out of there. They're just trying to gain an audience. And in that audience, they make money. You know, and maybe they'll even charge you. Well, I'm going to go and I'm going to hide over here. You know, I'll make it so that nobody will be able to follow me unless you pay. And they've created those types of circumstances where how many people are paying for nothing? Or I should say, actually, I honestly think when, like, people go to the Glenn Beck rallies and so forth, you get to meet like-minded people. You don't, you know, you feel comfortable because you're in a crowd of, you know, ewes. And I don't mean female sheep, but anyway, you're in a crowd of people that are, you know, like you, like-minded, you know, same kind of ideals. And you get out in the sun, and it's a positive experience. It's positive. It had nothing to do with saving anything and getting government back into the framework, but at least it was a positive experience. That is the same paradigm as the idea that the space within the hoop, you know, when you're looking at basketball, you know, and you're trying to teach kids basketball, and you've got somebody that's trying to teach your kids that the space within the hoop is just as valid as the space outside the hoop. What? You know, it's not about winning. It's about, you know, being together and having a nice day outside and not making people feel bad. That right there is some of the most dangerous, subversive thoughts and ideas that you can actually cling on to, or even say, well, you know, you got a point there. They need to be brought down, just like our public servants and our government need to be held accountable to those functions that they're supposed to actually be supporting. So, as I go through, and I want you to go through that list, that federal list of these agencies, look at them. I'm only going to go through the big ones, with most all of them are tucked underneath. But when we look at the Department of Justice, I've already told you, I don't have a problem with the federal government maintaining the Department of Justice. Its only job should be maintaining compliance that all people that are in office, because the Department of Justice has the purview, or the federal government has the purview over four crimes. We go over this all the time, right? Counterfeiting, treason, and then laws committed against the laws of nations and crimes committed on the high seas. That's their jurisdiction. So the Justice Department can kind of focus on that. But I think the thing that is really way out of hand is people violating their oaths of office and actually getting away with insurgencies against the Constitution. So this is why I think I'm not going into a dangerous, you know, walk at all. I'm not on thin ice at all when I say that the Department of Justice needs to be completely revamped, retooled, get rid of everybody, and their only focus is to identify jurists. Start off with Congress, but we're going to actually identify those people who are not in compliance, they're not supporting the Constitution, the original Constitution, and they're not doing what needs to be done. Boom, they're gone. Get rid of the jurists, get rid of the bureaucrats, going down that path, the Department of Justice should actually be saying, hey, you shouldn't exist. And as they basically stop the spending, because that's the one thing that the federal government can do. They have the authority to decommission it, but that is not the proper way. It's not the proper way, because they can come back along, and until the people understand, and I say this because the people have to understand that it is the state's job and responsibility to tell the federal government, you can't do that. We've got to get the adult britches back on our state governments and our local governments to say, you've got a job to do. You got a child over here in the state capital. That's your child. Get them into compliance. Ring them in. They don't have the authority in the constitutions you created for them. And, oh, state legislatures, you need to get your child in gear and back into compliance with those powers you delegated to them. It wasn't we. You didn't do it. I didn't do it. And the people back in those days didn't do it. It were delegates representing the people of the community, of the government. The county government created your state, and the state government created the federal. That's the parental relationship, and we the people, the one government where we actually go and create is either our districts, our county, whatever that is. And it's still done by delegates of the people. But instead of delegates of a governing body, it is literally direct representatives of the people. So, because when you look at a county and you have a county divided into districts and you're going to have a constitutional convention, does everybody get to vote for all of the delegates? No. You will vote for the delegates out of your district, and the people in their district will vote for the delegates out of theirs, which means that those are your representative for the county. And we have three different groups. If you got three districts, five and so forth. If this starts making sense, then you're starting to really understand republicanism and a representative government. Because it's not representative of all the people, it's representative of your specific community. I mean, you moved to that area, people migrated to that area so it could all be together. I mean, I can only think of one city that actually was, you know, created, not because people wanted to be together, they just lost their desire to keep going. And that's Denver, because when people came across the plains after that long trip and after all of the wear and tear on their carts, their wagons, their horses, themselves, they looked at those mountains and said, okay, this is a good place to settle down. Yeah, it's Denver. I have always called it Denver is the town for quitters. Because that's what created Denver, all the quitters that said, you know what? I think I'd rather set up a business here and help those people get over there or whatever. And I know, you know, there are, you know, derogatory things we can say about everything, but, you know, that's always been my favorite. It's a truism. Denver would never have existed because if you look at it, it's dry, it's barren. It's just like, wow. Why would you want to settle there other than the fact that it's way too much trouble to go back to where you came from and going over those? I mean, I'm sorry. Anyway, I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings. Let me back up. You have a right to be offended. There are some truths to all of these types of things that do hurt our feelings. You know, I have four eyes because I have a disability. I'm as blind as a bat. And so I've got to wear glasses. So when we actually start accepting these things about ourselves, it's harder and harder to get offended by them. So anyway, Denver, please, you know, get over yourself. Anywho, we'll get back into this. But on Monday, I really want to actually start talking more and more about what you need to do and how to do this. So we're going to talk about how we can start working with you and getting people educated and onto the path of interposition and off of the paths of the things that aren't going to help so that we can start taking back the party and all of these other things. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. Have a great weekend. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.